You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. It is Friday. We've made it. Another week in the Donald Trump 2.0 administration is in the books, and not without some pretty extraordinary fireworks this week. I'm just going to say this much. I've got a great co-host for the first approximate hour of the afternoon. You know him well. He is the host of Amicus, a law review on Saturdays on this fine network from 9 to 11. His name is James Santel, former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. Welcome back, James.
Maggie, good to be with you once again. As you said, quite a week, right? Exclamation points following that statement.
Quite a week. Here's what I'm doing now, Jim. I'm going to have like a Trump countdown to 200. 200 what? Not 200 days. No. 200 losses in court.
Mess.
He is approaching that number. By my last count, there's around like 180 odd court cases going through mostly federal courts for various reasons, but because it's the federal government primarily. And he's been losing most of them. So like the ticker is now going. So lots of activity this week. Jim, I wanted to just jump right in on the big one of today. Big news today. The Supreme Court, just within the last couple of hours, stepping in and has cleared the way, at least for now. For now, again, this is the emergency relief channel that you can use to get to the Supreme Court, aka the shadow docket. Has cleared the way for Donald Trump to revoke what a lot of people call basically immigration parole for over a half a million people that are in this country. It was an extension of legal status put into place under the Biden administration. Donald Trump revoked it. It was challenged. It was stayed initially. The appeals court put it back. Then that was appealed. And now the Supreme Court is saying this would be the largest group of individuals ever basically in the history of the United States to have their legal status here one day and gone the next without any what everyone in the back of the class.
Right. We know what those words are, right? Without something called due process and basic basic rights that are afforded everyone in this nation, whether you're a citizen or not. Maggie, you and I were chatting just a few days ago about another Supreme Court case. And at that time, you appropriately said, we've got about 350,000 Venezuelans who are now being affected by what the Supreme Court did. And today, here's your next category, perhaps, Maggie, my friend. How many things can we do that will affect immigrants and migrants in this nation? A half a million people now exposed. Again, on this shadow docket, we're not getting a statement from the Supreme Court about exactly why they're doing that. We've got some dissenting language. And once again, we've got a situation where, again, the underlying litigation continues. You and I have talked about this in the past. But the Supreme Court says, while that's going on, before we get to the merits of this, in the meantime, go ahead and begin to deport these people. 500,000 people in this nation as of a few hours ago.
Here, this is according to the Washington Post. The decision is the second time this month, as Jim has rightly pointed out, that the high court has given Trump officials permission to terminate the program that protects immigrants fleeing countries racked by war, economic turmoil, while litigation on those programs, in other words, the validity of those programs, continues. The justices also allowed the administration to revoke temporary protective status from a different group of nearly 350,000 Venezuelans. That means in total, legal one day, you wake up the next and you're not, and masked people that don't have to identify themselves maybe banging down your door in the middle of the night to disappear you. We're talking about a total of 880,000 people, nearly a million people in this country, for whom there is apparently no legal recourse. Literally, they can be disappeared in the middle of the night.
They are out there.
Am I understanding this correctly,
I think you are, I don't think, I know that you're identifying that exactly correctly, Maggie. And again, it doesn't help a lot, but we've got Ketanji Brown Jackson, who is the voice out there saying, what are we doing? Probably channeling some of your rage and my rage and my utter disappointment in what our Supreme Court is doing these days. And she is talking again about the merits of this case down the road. She says, you know, even if down the road, the petitioners here are not successful, this is not the way we litigate in America. And she's absolutely right about that. Let's, again, this shadow docket, once again, this emergency docket, where now we're doing everything, right? We begin the litigation. We put together one of those 180 injunctions that's now a part of your routine math on all of this, Maggie. And then what we do is we run to the Supreme Court and say, while this is all pending, stop all this or permit us to go back and put all this in place again. That's how litigation now at the highest levels of importance is being conducted today. And as you said, just under a million people now, it was a few days ago, now can be subject to removal, even while the underlying case, once again, is still not decided on the merits. It should be shocking for everyone.
And here's the thing, the emergency docket, and I guess there's two observations that I want to make about this. The first is Donald Trump will laud courts when he wins, and he will call for judges' impeachment by name when he loses. That's hogwash, right? Like, this is the role of the courts to take each case up and assess it, to have these emergency interventions as individual judges or justices deem appropriate in their good faith objective interpretation of the law. That's our system. What I find really disturbing, Jim, about the Supreme Court's, what I'm just going to call, it is an objective fact when you analyze its use of the emergency docket and when the Supreme Court elects to intervene through this emergency shadow docket, there is no discernible, consistent set of principles that you can look to understand or explain the court's interventions. You simply can't. And it's not on the merits, because the Supreme Court over the last 15 years has done things that favored a party on its emergency docket and on the merits decided in favor of the other party. So that isn't even, not a sufficient amount of explanatory power, to put it in sort of economist terms. And the thing that I want people to understand about the shadow or emergency docket is that its use dates back to a time when it was nearly exclusively used in death penalty cases.
Yes.
And specifically, the posture was, if the Supreme Court could see that there were serious questions about actual innocence or serious process flaws.
Something that went to the trial, the merits of it, process, that, and you say, you know, again,
if the person was actually guilty, absolutely, the process was so flawed that it would, frankly, erode public trust in criminal prosecutions writ large. This is when the court would say, listen, we're going to keep the status quo, meaning we're going to keep this person alive,
right?
And not permit the state to change the facts by killing this person, so that we can ensure that the integrity of largely our criminal justice system is preserved, so that we preserve public trust. This was the positioning of these cases, without getting into the what is habeas and how does it work. Here's the point, the second point that I'm trying to make here, Jim, and I just want to get your reaction there too. And that is, not only is the court's decisions about what cases to accept and hear through its shadow emergency docket indecipherable. There's no discernible principle.
No consistency.
It's intervention and the outcomes, meaning whether it intervenes, whether it stops actions, are also not susceptible to any cogent, consistently applied set of principles. Meaning, if you simply take the principle of preserving the status quo and not permitting the government before a case is fully litigated to materially impact businesses or other people's lives, this is a case that shows you how deeply flawed this Supreme Court's view and embrace and use of the shadow docket is. These are people that could be disappeared overnight. It is nearly a million people. They were legal one day, not legal the next. Again, if you go back to that fundamental, like, hey, how did this used to be? What were the, how did the court use its powers historically? This is such a departure from that, ripping away protections, freedoms, etc., with no recourse for the people affected. It's such a departure, is it not?
It is absolutely that kind of departure. And your listeners, again, I'll use the word once again, should be outraged by this. Again, we go to the merits of this, of the process, the demerits of the process here, as Ketanji Brown Jackson and others have said. And you don't see that consistency. One of the other things that I think is at the core of what you're saying, Maggie, is just this. Here's what you also lose. By doing this way, what are you losing? You're losing the opportunity to hear on briefs. Yes, that's right. Lawyers like us, we love to write things, right? You're not submitting the extensive briefs. You're not having those oral arguments in front of the court where Ketanji Brown Jackson and Neil Gorsuch and all the others can spar and go back and forth and talk about the underlying merits, peek under the rug, if you will, as they talk about it. You're losing all of that process, and along the way, you lose, therefore, the humanity, candidate in a case like this. Supreme Court justices often look and say, these are real people, are they not? How can we deal with this in the best way to preserve their rights, their interests? You lose that opportunity. And the other thing American population loses, again, at number one, the top of this is 500,000 people, but secondarily, a sense of access to and transparency when it comes to government. Why is my, as you just said, why is my Supreme Court doing this? We don't know, and the consistency is simply not apparent. That is not good government, regardless of what branch you're a part of. All of that process is missing here.
As Justice Jackson wrote in her dissent today, the court botched this assessment. It undervalues the devastating consequences of allowing the government to precipitously upend the lives and livelihoods of nearly 500,000 non-citizens while their legal claims are pending. She went on to warn that, quote, social and economic chaos will ensue if that many non-citizen parolees are suddenly and summarily remanded to their home countries. These people have integrated into American neighborhoods and communities in the hopes of eventually securing long-term legal status and effectively their rights to have those cases heard in full on their merits have now been obliterated by a Supreme Court without consistent principle nor consistent application. It's not supposed to be this way. Your two legal eagles are here to help you through all the morass, all of the news. I got Jim Santel, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dwan, former court counsel from Milwaukee County, former federal court clerk for Judge Michael Caney in the Seventh Circuit. And this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Ding dong, Elon's gone. At least we all hope so. No more billionaire overlords, or just maybe billionaire overlords that pull the strings of politicians from afar, question mark? But Doge is still around. Who knows what all of it means? Maybe it's because Stephen Miller is ticked off that Elon Musk is apparently poaching Stephen Miller's wife from the White House to come work with him at SpaceX. It is a mess, but all part of the mess that James Santel, your co-host with me today, Maggie Dawn, here on the Civic Media Radio Network, are trying to unpack for you. Lots of news this week. On a more local basis, we had the Joint Finance Committee met yesterday. They approved updates in the biennial budget process to the state employees' pension system, talked about certain DSPS contract workers. There's a whole lot going on in that sphere, and we are so lucky here on the Maggie Dawn Show to have the ranking Democratic member of the Joint Finance Committee joining me on Monday to talk about the biennial budget process. Senator LaTanya Johnson, you're not going to want to miss that. Again, that's on Monday. Mark your calendars and join us for that excellent discussion. Meanwhile, also in the state legislature, the LGBTQ plus caucus has unveiled its equality agenda just in time for Pride Month. We will be covering that. The package includes four bills and two joint resolutions aimed at increasing equity and removing discriminatory language from Wisconsin law. And I just want to put this thought out there for everyone. Wherever you may sit in the culture wars, whatever your personal beliefs are, I think we can agree on one thing. We can save the arguments for the book bans for another day. But when it comes to equal treatment under the law, that is something that I think all of us can get behind. I certainly hope that we could do so on the show when we pick that discussion up in upcoming Pride Month. And of course, locally, Judge Hannah Dugan filed her brief yesterday supporting her motion to dismiss her entire criminal indictment. Jim, I just wanted to spend 1 second talking about Judge Dugan's filing because there were some juicy bits. I haven't quite parsed through the entire brief yet. It's pretty lengthy. I'll be doing that over the weekend. That's my fun weekend reading.
Yes, right. That's also briefs. What lawyers do, right?
This is our free time.
Who needs Netflix, right? We've got briefs to look through, right?
We've got briefs to look through. Here's a line from the brief that Judge Dugan filed. This is an extraordinary prosecution that poses a threat to federalism and judicial independence. Dismissal here flows from a straightforward application of long-settled law. The indictment itself is an ugly innovation. Its dismissal will not be. Nothing in the Constitution allows the federal government to superintend the administration and case-by-case daily functioning of state courts as this indictment proposes. Absolutely fascinating. The federal prosecutors will have until June 9th to reply, and then the defendants get a sure reply due by June 16th. So this is moving along at quite a clip. Currently, yes. Trial scheduled for July. I don't personally think that trial date is going to hold,
though
Judge Dugan has said she will avail herself of her right to a speedy trial. Here's another line from the brief. The court should not engage in fact-finding. A bar like immunity blocks the proceedings from the outset. And indeed, they invoke at length, oh, the irony of ironies, Donald Trump's own arguments about absolute immunity. Jim, your reaction to the filing. I thought it was a fine piece of writing,
Piece of writing, and you pick up on that word innovation that you just identified there, Maggie. The lawyers who are putting this in front of eventually Judge Lynn Edelman, go first to a magistrate judge, as you and I both know, and that magistrate judge will make a recommendation. Here it'll be interesting to see what that recommendation may be, but ultimately it lands in Judge Edelman's basket, if you will. And this is a judge, as you and I both know, once again, who's not afraid to be, I don't even call it innovative, right? He's one who has seized upon these kinds of concepts, 10th Amendment, judicial immunity. And again, we both know this is also the judge who many years ago found the sentencing guidelines of the federal system unconstitutional. Turns out the Supreme Court said yes, agreed with him. He's not afraid to be out there. And so as this goes forward, again, we're not going to get this right away. It's going to be weeks, as you just said. Don't be surprised if Judge Edelman does play around with at least one of these two. Again, this 10th Amendment issues. We got federalism here, and you got basically the federal government mucking around in the state system. Stay out of it. James Madison stuff. That's the one argument here. And the second, of course, is this irony, of course. All right, Chief Justice John Roberts, if you tell us that a president of the United States of America is immune, admittedly, an executive part of that branch of government, not a judicial member, but still those fundamental concepts that talk about the reasons for a branch of government to be nimble and be able to act well and be act in a way that's appropriate to its mission. Same kinds of concepts should apply. That's their argument in any event. I recognize, as do you, that people will say, oh, come on, that's not going to fly. But again, this is the world in which we're living. We're outraged by what happened in July. Those principles, why not, Judge Adelman, take a look at them and see if maybe just so they should be applicable here in this case in the Eastern District of Wisconsin. And that's also the consistent we talked about before. That should also be on Judge Adelman's docket.
What I think is really fascinating about this case is the concepts underlying executive immunity, presidential immunity, which is fundamentally rooted in this idea that that branch, the president, has to be able to act unilaterally and with
strength,
without
and
the
speed
fear
and right,
of being in, right, like challenged, applies when you think about the concept of absolute judicial immunity. And that's where they're going with this. Stay tuned here. Jim and I will keep you all up to date on that. What is the relationship between pardons, nominations, and terminations in the federal government? Jim and I break it all down for you next. Corruption. That's the hint. Corruption. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. One love, especially on Fridays when it is a free ticket Friday. This is where we give away tickets to the Brewers games in Civic Media's lovely club seats. We're going to do that today, of course, in order to qualify to win in the statewide Free Ticket Friday Text to Win contest. You're going to need the Civic Media app, which you can get for free wherever you get your apps from. When I drop the secret word to win sometime during today's show, you're going to text that word via the app. That's going to qualify you to win. You'll get a bounce back text message confirming that you've been entered. We select the winners on Mondays. You will get contacted by Civic Media, and we transfer the tickets via the MLB ticket app. It's called the Ballpark app, so you got to have that. I will be dropping the word before the end of the show. You're going to have to stay tuned. I'm not exactly sure when I'm going to do this. And the tickets that we're giving away today, there are four of them. It is for a Saturday evening game. Wondering what to do that first big weekend in June? Well, we'll have you covered. That is when the Brewers tee off against the San Diego Padres right here at AmFam Field, Saturday, June 7th at 6:35 p.m. Again, that's Saturday, June 7th at 6:35 p.m. Full rules of the Free Ticket Friday Text to Win contest can be found on Civic Media's website. Stay tuned. I'm going to drop that word before we're done for the day. And if things could not get any better for all of us, it is about to be the Scotty Summer Text to Win giveaway. We've got trips, tickets, prizes, all kinds of cool stuff. Again, you're going to need the Civic Media app for that. That kicks off on Monday. So starting on Monday, every single day of the week, there's going to be some fun stuff for you to win from Civic Media, hoping to make your summer a little sweeter every day on Civic Media and right here on this program. I've got James Santel, my fine guest co-host, on Fridays and sometimes Tuesdays as well. He is the former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, a fine legal eagle friend of mine and a friend of each one of yours. You want more, Jim? I always do. I catch him every Saturday morning from 9 to 11. He hosts a show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network called Amicus, a Law Review. Check him out tomorrow. I'm sure he'll be going deeper into some of these issues that we have been covering. Jim, there was quite a bit that happened this week in Donald Trump land, in the MAGA regime, that related to nominations for key positions within Trump's government. And we haven't even uttered the words Jeannie Pirro yet. Mm-hmm. There was a slew of pardons that dropped, and there was a Supreme Court decision early last week that dealt with whom Donald Trump can fire even if federal law says he can't fire it. Them without cause,
out of independent agencies created by the Congress, right?
Yes.
And he says, no, I've got the ability, the capacity. I'm going to fire them even though it's not for cause, but I can do it just because I've got this powerful position that the people of the United States of America put me in, and the Supreme Court has said I can do it. So that combination, that trifecta, it is a problem, right?
So I briefly talked about the Supreme Court decision. Again, this was an application for a stay. Mm-hmm. So again, the emergency and shadow docket. This particular case dealt with firing people from the National Labor Relations Board and a related labor oversight board called the Merit Systems Protection Board. Again, these are independent boards or commissions established by Congress legislatively. And again, the key word here is independent. The president, when there are vacancies as defined within the enabling legislation, when there are vacancies, the president does get to appoint to them. But presidents aren't supposed to be able to remove people from these congressionally created independent agencies unless they're being terminated for cause. Donald Trump intentionally fired a bunch of people and said, I'm not doing this for cause. I'm doing this because I think I should have the power to just fire people off these so-called, we thought they were independent, but maybe not so much. The Supreme Court, again, on its emergency shadow docket, said, go ahead and fire these people. That's just fine. It was a pretty interesting decision. I just wanted to read a little bit, and then we're going to stitch all this together, Jim and I will, for each and every one of you fine listeners, because whether you're looking at who he's nominating into these key, and specifically most recently U.S. attorney positions, as well as judicial nominations, you look at who he's pardoning, and now we think about these so-called, supposed to be legislatively created by Congress, independent boards and commissions that he now, according to the Supreme Court, can just fire anybody for no reason or any reason he sees fit to. What are we looking at here? And you have to really pull all those things together and look at them as a whole, not as individual widgets. But here's the interesting language from this interim decision from the Supreme Court. He may remove without cause executive officers who exercise presidential power on his behalf, subject to narrow exceptions recognized by our presidents. They're not applicable here. The stay in this case, in other words, our decision to let Donald Trump fire these people, reflects our judgment that the government is likely to show that both of these so-called independent boards exercise considerable executive power. But we don't ultimately decide in this posture whether the NLRB or this other board falls within such a recognized exception. The stay also reflects our judgment that the government faces greater risk of harm from an order allowing a removed officer to continue exercising the executive power than a wrongfully removed officer from being unable to perform her statutory duty. We're going to get to the Fed in a second, Jim. But that sentence from the Supreme Court in this order. So there, okay, you've talked about the risk of harm to the removed officer. You've talked about the risk of harm to the executive branch, which Congress had made a judgment should be limited to for cause removals. Like, that was the first branch, the Article I congressional branch of government's decision. The court's saying, no, we're going to wipe that away. Dear Supreme Court, where in the hell is the interest of the public to have independent boards and commissions remain as apolitical, objective, free from corruption, and independent as Congress intended them? It's not mentioned anywhere in this interim order.
Absolutely.
The interest of the public. Right.
You look at the legislative history, both on NLRB, as you said, and the MSPB, and it was exactly that. The Congress said, you know what, we can't have these important labor decisions, these important personnel decisions, be made by the whims of somebody in the White House, regardless of whether Democrats or Republicans. We don't want that to happen. It's in the law, right? And so now we've got a Supreme Court that says, okay, because it's kind of mushy, it's kind of executive-like, we're going to permit this to be underneath the president. Again, this is, as you and I both know, once again, this is the larger unitary executive theory, right, where we do everything. And here's the other point that you're making, Maggie, which is just this. Harm to the people of the United States of America? You bet. Because in the meantime, when these two are not permitted to come back into their service with the NLRB and the MSPB, what happens? The quorums that are required for them to make decisions are not there.
There.
They can't act. These agencies cannot act. And that, too, I suspect, is a part of your larger theory about this, which is to bring them down, right? You get rid of these people and you bring the very operation of government to its knees.
And I've made these arguments before. You can actually see, like, the con that is afoot, right? It's not about efficiency questions. It's about actually destroying the government department from within. It's not about making sure that executive power is being fulfilled and not hampered in an unconstitutional way. No, it's actually about Donald Trump ensuring that he can engage in pay-to-play and loyalty testing to appoint people that may or may not be acting in the best interest of the American public, because now Donald Trump can just fire him at will. Oh, you're not doing what I want? Boom, you're gone. Which opens up this Pandora's box, not just for a lack of accountability to the American people, because this stuff is so in the weeds, Jim. It's so deep.
It is.
99% of people have no idea what the hell the NLRB is.
Right.
Lawyers,
the MSPB, like, right?
Yeah, right. Or correct. But what it opens up is this very real possibility for pay to play. When I say pay to play, it means if I give money or other favors to an elected official or a candidate, they will then exercise their powers in a way that benefits me, you know, by like appointing loyalists to a so-called congressionally created, quote, independent board or commission like the NLRB, which is supposed to help businesses and labor organizations resolve disputes and decide what this very complicated area of law that is called labor law is. That is corruption. That is the swamp, right? Like, this is the thing that all of us hate in government, regardless of party. And then when you look at, oh, well, we should give this administration and this president the presumption of regularity and good faith, because that's what we do with presidents. Not this guy.
Right.
Just look at who he just pardoned this week. These weren't people who went through the regular pardon process, which you understand well. These were donors and very vocal supporters with big platforms. This wasn't someone or individuals that expressed contrition, changed their lives. I shouldn't speak in absolutes as to all of them, but the vast majority of them, these were people who advocated for Donald Trump as a candidate, donated to him. That's who's getting these pardons. They're not going through a vetting process.
They're not.
He's just like, yeah, that's corruption. That's the swamp. Democrat or Republican president, that's bad. You look at who he's nominating, whether it's to federal circuit courts, these are appeals courts, or appeals courts.
A guy named Emile Beauvais comes to mind, right? Right? To the Third Circuit, right? Right? Exactly. And again, on the pardon piece, again, you and I both know a little bit of civics here as well. There's a thing called the pardon attorney. The office of the pardon attorney is inside the Department of Justice. And what do you do if you want a pardon? You submit your application there. You describe how you are, in fact, contrite. You're sorry that you've done this thing, and there's something about your life that now warrants the records basically to be not completely wiped out historically, but removed the burden of that prior criminal prosecution and the conviction that you have suffered. That's the way it's supposed to be done when you're no longer going through the basic process. There again, you're doing exactly the kinds of things that you're doing inside these agencies. You're saying, you know what, we're not going to do that process. We're not going to have a quorum, and therefore we're just going to do whatever we want. If you pay $1 million to have dinner with me, we will ensure that a member of your family does, in fact, get the pardon that they're looking for. That's the corruption you're speaking about.
And again, we're seeing this time and time and time again from a man who said to voters, said to his base, I will drain the swamp. This is the swamp. This is making government less responsive, less transparent, less accountable, whether you're talking pardons, nominations, or how he's dealing with those individuals that are serving on congressionally created independent or at least supposedly independent boards and commissions. We're going to turn the page, talk about a couple of other things when we come back. Did you know that the chief information officer for DOGE, the so-called Department of Efficiency, was deposed yesterday? I do.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I want to give some shout-outs to our great listeners on the text line engaging this afternoon. Of course, Cam from Appleton. Hello, my friend. Linda from Milwaukee. She loves the Legal Eagles on the Maggie Nahan Show. We've got Dave Brumman listening on WMDX from Oregon, Wisconsin. Mark from Prairie du Sac. Tiffany from River Falls. Hello, everybody. Welcome. Happy Friday. And Dale from Wausau is on the phone lines. Dale, we're going to get to your call in just a moment. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got James Santel with me this afternoon. Thanks for being here, James. It's a real pleasure. I mentioned this. So there is the one of the nearly 200 cases that Donald Trump is losing nearly everywhere, with some exceptions. We've talked about a couple of them.
There are a few.
In the federal,
there are just a few.
Just a couple. Yeah. One of those cases is a case that is proceeding, I believe it's the Eastern District of New York, not the Southern District of New York, in federal court, challenging DOGE's accessing of private information of all of us. Social security numbers, where you live, how much you pay in taxes, the whole kit and caboodle. One could argue maybe one of the reasons Elon's totally fine packing up and going home, as he's already gotten the cookies out of the cookies jar, so he doesn't need anything else. Rabid speculation on my part. But here's what's really interesting, Jim. Yesterday, it wasn't a deposition. I misspoke before the break. It was not a deposition. The chief information officer, the CIO of the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, was put on the stand in an evidentiary hearing, a preliminary evidentiary hearing, again, related to emergency relief, temporary relief being sought, in this case that has been brought challenging DOGE's access to this sensitive information. And the CIO of DOGE admitted on the stand yesterday that DOGE has not been complying with the requirements of federal law under the Privacy Act. I want everyone listening to sit with that for a moment. The chief information officer, so the guy handpicked by our billionaire overlord Elon Musk to access all of these information systems, admitted in federal court under oath yesterday that DOGE employees have not been complying with the Privacy Act. Now, there are other pieces of litigation that are going on in other courts. I think there's one in Maryland. I think there may be another one in a Virginia court. All of these have to deal with this information access for different departments and in different ways and shapes and forms. Courts have intervened and provided varying levels of relief, some requiring retraining, limitation of the access of various DOGE employees to like the absolute essentials. But this admission in federal court yesterday is remarkable. It is the thing that should tick all of us off, regardless of party, regardless of whom we may have voted for, because our most sensitive data is not being protected
about illegals
by the people who are sworn to protect it. Jim, I just wanted to get your reaction to that bit of sworn testimony yesterday.
Privacy Act is a bedrock principle. And in many ways, many applications, Maggie, as we both know, it applies across the board. And basically, it does what it says. It says what it does, which is when it comes to this kind of information, as you just said, tax information, Social Security information. And oh, by the way, when the IRS is created, when the Social Security Administration is created, what does the Congress also do? By the way, all that's got to be private, right? You can't get at it, right? Right? And so that too, right?
And I'm going to look at Jacob. Do we have the Elizabeth Warren sound with the guy that was a... Okay, let me just get this quick question in. Dale from Wausau, say hi to Jim. What you got for us this afternoon?
Hey, Dale.
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. Three quarters of a million Venezuelan people being deported and maybe murdered by the country they are deported to, contrary to how the emergency docket was used in the past, especially when the case involved the possibility of the death sentence for the accused. And the courts protecting the person accused from being prematurely being put to death before the deliberations in the case being finally completed and the case being adjudicated and the court finding the accused to be guilty or not and the penalty decided if found guilty. In essence, probably a percentage of these Venezuelan people who will be put to death because of the Supreme Court putting a stay on a premature deportation of these Venezuelan people. And if that's the case, if a percentage of them are put to death, there will be blood on the hands of the Supreme Court. Thank you.
The analogy is a good one, right? Right? And we talked before, these principles they can't be perfectly consistent across the board. Not every single, you got variations, but Dale just underscores one of them, which is, again, if you're going to approach this in this cavalier way with dramatic results, you got to be consistent. And it's human beings, it's humanity at stake.
Folks, that is former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, James Santel. His fine program you can find Saturday mornings across the Civic Media Radio Network from 9 to 11 called Amicus, a Law Review. My name's Maggie Dawn. I mentioned some sound from Senator Elizabeth Warren questioning Donald Trump's nominee to lead the IRS. I'm going to save that nugget. We're going to have time later in the show. Also, a bombshell dropping today. Senator Joni Ernst, oops, the quiet part. She said it out loud in a hearing. You're not going to believe it. It's the cruelty embraced with a bear hug by a Republican senator. We're going to have that sound for you as well. Do not go anywhere. We've got all that and so much more coming up next. I've got Journal Sentinel reporter Eva Wen joining me on the other side. Did you know that DHHS just made some stuff up about somebody to deport them? Anybody surprised? Yeah, that's what due process is for. We discuss reporter Wen from the Journal Sentinel. When we come back, we got that sound queued up for you. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great weekend, Jim.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.